This episode is brought to you by the Inspire Collection by Kalia. Just because you're working out doesn't mean you shouldn't look fabulous. The Inspire Collection by Kalia was designed with both style and performance in mind. It looks good, feels good, and stays put no matter how you move. And the collection has everything you need for a day at the gym. A support bra, crop tanks, bike shorts, amazing leggings, and more. It's their most versatile collection yet. Shop the Inspire Collection by Kalia now, exclusively at Dick's Sporting Goods.
From the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Studios, this is Inside Jeopardy!
Oh yes, hello and welcome back to Inside Jeopardy, your exclusive and official podcast destination for all things happening in the world of Jeopardy! I'm Sarah Foss, and I'm joined by the man who needs no introduction, Buzzy Cohen, and also Jeopardy! Senior researcher and gameplay analyst, the Enabler, Michael Harris. Welcome to you both!
Thank you, glad to be back.
How does it feel to have an epithet, the Enabler?
Well, I mean, I guess if I'm going to be known by anything, that's as good a title as someone can have.
And you've had it for a few years now.
Yeah, like, I've had it for a while.
This is not new to Inside Jeopardy. Yeah. We've been calling him the Enabler for
a course. I have to say, when I come to a taping, which I don't often get the chance to, I always love sitting as close to Michael Harris as possible to watch him enable those signaling devices. And as well as enabling Michael Davies with his mid-game analysis. You're like doing 8 different things at once. It's incredibly impressive.
I mean, you can't for 1 second zone out.
No, I have to stay focused and in gameplay, which is what I like about it. But I also have to stay focused with Ken and the subtle changes between what the contestants are doing and how they're responding. And if there's a subtle change where, you know, Ken suddenly realizes, okay, yeah, this is not going to be correct, so I can re-enable the board, all of that. But yeah, it's great.
Speaking of enabling, Michael has done a lot of enabling because we have concluded week one of the Second Chance competition brought to you by Moderna. On Friday, that wrapped up with Jessica Stevens advancing to the Tournament of Champions. So looking forward to diving into all of these games with the two of you later in the pod. And as a reminder, today we head into week two of Second Chance, where Sadie Goldberger, Alicia O'Hare, Doe Park, Tom Philippos, Nikki Porcaro, Jeff Smith, Sarah Snyder, Rowan Ward, and Jack Weller will all be back to battle for that final spot in the TOC.
And in case you've missed seeing them so far, you can check out the contestant sizzle reels on the Jeopardy! YouTube channel for a fun review of what gave each of these players a solid case for a second chance. And our own Ken Jennings called them his new favorite thing.
Yes, Ken and you, Buzzy, both reached out to me to inquire about who had put those videos together because you were loving them. The credit goes to our social and digital team, who are always up to great things. But in particular on this one, want to call out, shout out, Devin O'Rourke. He wrote all of those pieces and he voiced the scratch tracks. They were so good that we all agreed it needed to be him who voiced the final versions. Those really are so much fun. So make sure you check them out if you haven't already. And later in today's episode, we'll be featuring my interview with Michael Strahan, who presented a category last week. And we'll be discussing Celebrity Jeopardy, where Aisha Tyler, John Michael Higgins, and Matt Rogers competed for the first spot in our second of 3 semifinals in Celebrity Jeopardy. And at the end of the show, you'll get to hear my conversations with our Tournament of Champions competitors, Megan Wachspress, Erica Hosick, John Fogt, and Ryan Long. Okay, first up, let's get into week one of Second Chance. We kick Monday off with Cindy Zhang, Aaron Golias, Jessica Stevens. I know a lot of people were disappointed with this matchup because they thought, how could you put so many of our favorites up against each other? But it was bound to happen. It did not disappoint.
Cindy Zhang did not disappoint in the handwriting or in the fashion department. Really impressive. But, of course, Jessica Stevens was playing great. Michael, what do you see in here?
Well, you know, as the game started, it was a pretty much even exchange between Cindy and Aaron. And even though there was high hopes on Jessica, it seemed like she was struggling to kind of find her rhythm in that first round. It was a pretty even exchange. And as you can see from their stats, their buzz-ins that they actually got in to respond were quite even, 10 across the board for all three contestants. It did, of course, take Jessica a little bit of time to find her rhythm, which she managed to do after Cindy made an error. But that era was kind of a pivotal moment for Jessica, because not only did she go into first break with the lead, she maintained it after the break and started the Double Jeopardy round in the lead.
Yeah, and starting out that Double Jeopardy round, Cindy and Aaron have a couple of errors that really helps Jessica, without doing too much, extend her lead. And when she hits that first daily double, responds correctly, it's open space, as we say, in front of Jessica Stevens, a.k.a. Jeopardy Karen Allen.
Yeah, Jessica continued her momentum, and especially toward the end of the round, she was picking up some high-value clues, and so she just maintained that lead as we went toward the end of the game.
Yeah, Final Jeopardy, Aaron and Jessica are correct, but it doesn't really matter at that point because it is a runaway game for Jessica Stevens. Pretty satisfying to see her move on to the finals. As we've talked about, she was the inspiration originally for Michael Davies and this competition. Love the support for our contestants, though. I saw Cindy posted a video of a watch party back in New York with her trivia group. A lot of love out there for the second chancers. Interestingly enough, Jessica, when she would call in a category, you know, she would stay in one category, so she just would call out the number value, which can be tricky, especially for Michelle on our team, who's back in the back, you know, indicating mm-hmm. which clue she's going to pop up. We encourage contestants to always say the category as well as the dollar amount, but if they're maintaining it in the same category, we'll kind of let it slide. And this show featured the category with Michael Strahan, A to Z of skincare. I know we heard some, mm-hmm. we heard some pushback from people feeling like this was a commercial, but I want people to look at the actual category and the actual clues. And A to Z of skincare, our writers wrote some brilliant clues about general skincare. And in my opinion, Michael Strahan brought it. He delivered it with energy and excitement. I had a chance to catch up with him after our recording session with him. And let's take a listen. You're a category on Jeopardy. What does that feel like?
It feels like I have hit the lottery. But I'm on Jeopardy. I've made it. Look at everything else. Nothing else compares to being on Jeopardy. And, you know, I'm excited about it because it's such an iconic show. And I've hope to be on for years, so now to be a part of it is special.
You've got something cool you're introducing.
Yeah, I have my new skincare line, Michael Strahan Daily Defense, so it's kind of going hand in hand, and it's a category that kind of fits me and my lifestyle right now, because skin is confidence. And I think when you're playing the game of Jeopardy, you better come on there and be confident, and knowing that you don't have to worry about your skin because it looks good and all those things, that's confidence builder.
So you host Pyramid. One of our hosts, Ken Jennings, was a guest on your show. What do you have to say about his performance?
When Ken Jennings came on the $100,000 Pyramid, I've never seen the people work there so excited. And I'm not just talking, I'm talking about everyone. I had an intern of mine, Tyler, who's 20 years old. That was the only person we've had on the entire season he cared to have a picture with. Because Pyramid and having Ken on was kind of like, it just goes hand in hand because he is a genius. And I can't say enough about how great he was.
You also had a chance to meet our legendary host, Alex Trebek.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Oh, man. Meeting Alex Trebek was an experience that I'll never forget, to be able to go to his home and spend some time with him and his wife, Jean. He had just come off the roof from removing leaves. And this was while he was going through, you know, everything that he was dealing with at that time. And just an amazing man, inspiring man. And just to be around someone who you watched every day and always gave you just this spirit of happiness. And it was a special something I'll never forget. And I know I'm one of the few people who can say they've actually had a chance to spend that time with him like that. And I appreciate him and Gene for letting me into their home and sharing that time.
Well, they appreciated that time as well. And We're so happy to feature you on Jeopardy.
Jeopardy, baby.
Woo-hoo!
I'm coming for you. Yes, I am not playing because I'm not good. I'm just introducing some stuff in the category, which is perfect for me. Those who can't play host, that's why I host Pyramid too.
We love it. Just great to hear Michael reflect on his interview that he had with Alex. You know, he is someone who had a connection to our show, a connection to Alex. And so really great to catch up with him and to feature him in this category. Moving on now to Tuesday's game, our second game in the second chance. This is an all-female competition.
Yeah, with Erica Wiener-Amachi competing in place of Isaac Applebaum.
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, Isaac Applebaum was not able to compete at the last minute. So Erica Wiener-Amachi, our alternate, was called in. You know, we have alternates for all of our competitions. Rarely do we ever get the chance to use them. In this case, Erica found out the morning she was going to play, so it was almost a second chance for her.
Michael, walk us through what you were seeing in this game.
Well, Molly takes an early lead in the Jeopardy round. It seems that everyone's kind of tentative as the game moves along, but Erica gets the Daily Double, responds correctly, but doesn't gain traction from that, as often some contestants will do.
Starting out Double Jeopardy, Tracy and Erica were really, it was like a little tennis game between the two of them going back and forth, huh?
Oh, yeah. For a minute, it was just kind of like their show. Molly does manage to find the first Daily Double in the DJ round. From a third place position, she makes her wager and she moves into second place.
Yeah, and Erica Wiener Amachi winning the eyewear game and also going into
I
final.
I think she called them her new woker glasses.
Oh. But going into final in the lead, Tracy is still in this because Erica has to bet to cover a Molly doubling. Michael, what do you think about, let's talk a little bit about the wagering situation going into final. What are you thinking here?
Well, I mean, even though Erica had a strong lead, she has to make sure that if Molly doubles, that she has enough to cover that and maintain the win in the game. Molly made a very conservative bet in this case, which I think surprised maybe all of us.
Not the traditional second place wager.
No, not the traditional second place wager, especially when you're like, hey, this is one and done.
Yeah.
You want to take it, which actually worked to her favor,
totally.
Obviously, because the final ended up being extremely hard. It was an 0-for-3, and Molly managed to win the game.
Molly tweeted last Wednesday, you know, beyond psyched to join Jessica Stevens in this week's two-day Total Point Affair finale, along with mystery contestant number 3, who shall it be? And then Jessica Stevens responded, and when does our new band, naturally called 2 Day Total Point Affair, drop the album? Buzzy, we know you'd be first in line to buy that album.
I would buy that album, and maybe they could do the soundtrack for my yet-to-be-shot comedy thriller, 2 Day Total Point Affair.
Yes, I have to say, when Buzzy hosted the Tournament of Champions and we were going through the different, you know, versions of opens and things that he would talk about, he's like, when do I get to say 2 Day Total Point Affair? Because that's when I'll know.
I just love that phrase.
I've made it as a Jeopardy host.
Well, let's find out who's going to join them on our Wednesday game. We had James Fraser, Renee Russell, and Pam Schoenberg.
Hearing James say that when he got the email to compete, he thought it was spam. You know, he was deployed. He thought, there's no way they're asking me to go back. But then he gave it a second read. He said, oh my gosh. So then he goes and says, can I leave my deployment early? And thankfully, the military let him get out early. But a lot of pressure on him, I think, to perform as a result.
Absolutely.
Well, I found that James came into the game very composed. He seemed to be well prepared and ready to play. And that showed in his gameplay. In the first round, he hits the Daily Double. He makes the maximum wager, so he instantly takes the lead. Pam makes a small push before the end of the round, the first Jeopardy round, close the gap with James, who at that point has a $4,000 lead over his next opponent, Pam, heading into the DJ round.
Just looking at those numbers, he is in that Jeopardy round. They're neck and neck on attempts, but he is just getting in first. He is not giving incorrect responses. Went on a 5-clue streak. That's intimidating. But as we see, as we get into Double Jeopardy, Renee and Pam do not let up. Renee runs into some trouble, but Pam really gets James up against the ropes.
Yeah, you could tell she kind of moved into a second gear.
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot where the Jeopardy round is sort of a rush because you're like, oh my God, I'm back here. What's going on? Da-da-da-da-da. Trying to catch your bearings, trying to sync up with our friend Michael Harris over here. And then Double Jeopardy, you're like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, well, she definitely, they both did have to kind of step up their game because James got the first Daily Double in that round. He responds correctly. He extended his lead. When we were getting close to the end of the Double Jeopardy round, Pam did manage to get within 5,000 of James's lead, but, you know, he was playing pretty strong. It was not easy. Renee, on the other hand, it just was not her day. She tried her best, and she ended up in the red and wasn't able to stay with us in final.
I think this is just an example of, you know, sometimes it's not your categories. Renee had such a strong game on her initial appearance, so we could run this back. We could play it with 3 different people. We could play with 3 the same people. We could do it again and have a different outcome. Just wasn't her day.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so we've got just a two-horse race in final. Category American history, a pretty broad subject in terms of Jeopardy. Really could go almost anywhere. Once again, interesting wagering in final. Pam is betting to cover James's current score as opposed to where he might go. What do you think about this, Michael?
I think it's probably a safe bet in that case. I mean, it is a one-and-done situation. Like you said, this is a broad final. It's like saying, the world, you know?
Yes.
There's so much that could be covered in this final. So I think she's playing smartly and conservatively and hoping that maybe it's so broad that they both get it wrong and she ends up capitalizing on maybe him either not betting or betting just enough for her to get ahead or too much
she's
to try to cover.
On him being incorrect, which I think when you're in second place is a smart tactic. I know it's not your tactic.
No,
you want to go all in for the win.
Not necessarily, but I think my issue with that approach is that if that's what you're thinking, he is going to bet, you know, 9,000 something or other, right? He's going to bet about a little over 9,000 to cover her. She bets too much if they both get it wrong. And so that's my kind of issue. It's neither a play to win or a play
saying.
For their, them both to be wrong.
Yeah.
So
she could have been a little bit more conservative.
He needs to be wrong for this to work out, her wager.
Correct. Or he needs to bet nothing and she gets it right. So I think it's if I were in Pam's position, I'm either betting much more or much less.
Yeah, maybe much less.
Yeah.
Well, in the end, wagering didn't really become a factor because James is the only one who is correct, and he advances to the finals where he will face on this next game Thursday up against Jessica Stevens and Molly Carroll for a spot in the TOC in a two-day total point affair.
Not one pair of glasses amongst them. This was a great two-day total point affair, I have to say. This was a really fun finals to watch. I did enjoy in the Jeopardy round the Jessica running the phobias category. What does that say about her?
Yeah, and that our writers come up with responses like, what is German people? I mean, who knew?
I mean, it was kind of a follow-up on Ike saying, what are Filipino people? And Simu calling him out on that.
Yeah,
so we've got a lot going on here on Jeopardy.
Social love on that one.
Well, I mean, the one thing I did notice at the start of the game, James dives for the hot corner. Now, there are places that folks know where the Daily Double will usually kind of appear on the Jeopardy board. Not always, but he dives for that hot corner and doesn't find it. Jessica, on the other hand, does capitalize, I believe it was on a rebound from him, and then she hits the phobia category, and like you said, boom, she runs it, and it kind of leaves James a little flat-footed. I don't think he was expecting that to be so open. He thought he was going to get the Daily Double, kind of get an early lead, and then kind of cruise. Jessica ends the round with 7,600. James was close at 7,000, and Molly trailing 2,800.
What is most impressive to me shows how great these second chance contestants are. No incorrect responses in that Jeopardy round. And as we come into Double Jeopardy, also very few. Slow start to the Double Jeopardy round, but James finds that first Daily Double, capitalizes on it, takes the lead.
And then James goes on a bit of a mini run and really does begin to extend his lead.
With that, he finds the second Daily Double in the round, but he responds incorrectly. And here is again one of those pivotal moments. It drops a little, but he still has the lead over Jessica. And you thought that might throw his game off, but it really, really doesn't.
Going into final, obviously, James has the lead here. Jessica, not that far behind. And Molly is still very much in this game. And we have to remember, this is a two-day total point affair. So you kind of have to treat this first final almost like a Daily Double that everybody gets to play.
Very true. Wagering is very important at this stage in this kind of competition.
And yet Jessica goes big with her wager. You know, she's betting $13,000. Molly a little bit more conservative. James wagering big as well.
One thing that people talk about in the Jeopardy world is effective lead, right? So right now James has a roughly $15,000 lead on Molly, but that is an effective lead of $7,500.
Right.
So if she's behind by $7,500 at the end of the game the next day, she can double that up to make up that $15,000.
And I love a two-day total point affair where when you're going into day two, anything can happen. It's still anyone's game. None of these totals is insurmountable.
Yeah, Jessica is only a few thousand dollars behind James. They're essentially starting at zero the next day.
Yeah, Buzzy, as you well know, you're not out of it until the last, you know, final Jeopardy in that kind of competition. What I found interesting in this second final, James, again, He's looking for those daily doubles. He finds one early on. He's in third place as he makes this wager. He's correct and he takes the lead. Who at that point, Molly has the lead, which in her previous games, she was not really coming from a leading position. Everyone seems to be pretty evenly matched, and then comes the moment. James makes an incorrect response on a $1,000 clue. Jessica starts to find her groove. That first round finishes with Jessica in the lead.
Here comes Double Jeopardy, though. James finds that first daily double. He goes true daily double. Gutsy move. He's incorrect. He responds, sees candy instead of Hershey. The other two competitors look at each other. They're like kind of giggling almost that he missed it. He knows he should have gotten it. And, you know, that was a pivotal moment for this game.
Did you notice the category, Sarah? It was the Blewett category. Thought it was kind of ironic. It was the Blewett category and he blew it, which he actually noted himself in the game. But this is a pivotal moment, as Sarah said. James lost his composure at this point. He is down. He's scrambling. Jessica has a good pace, a good rhythm. And so now James is good on the buzzer. He's trying to ring in as much as he can, but he's also catching himself because he's ringing in and realizing, I don't know the response. And so he is helping Jessica maintain her lead. Jessica continues to maintain her composure, keeps a steady lead. Molly is always in the game, nipping away, trying to stay close as she does each time she plays.
Jessica found that second daily double, wagers $3,500, and gets it correctly, and she's after it. So going into the final Jeopardy round, Jessica in the lead with $15,300, Molly with $10,600, James has just $2,000, but remember, two-day total point affair.
He did have the lead from the day before,
so anything can happen. And we got some interesting wagers once again in final, a final that tripped all three of our contestants up, which really goes to show that this could have been, you know, if James had gotten that correct and Jessica hadn't, he's winning this first week of the Second Chance competition.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I saw the wagers, there was like a subtle gasp.
We all kind of did gasp, yeah. Like, does she know that she could lose? She had it locked up.
What's
going on with this wager?
She totally had it locked up. She wagered way too much, given even the two-day spread. And had luck not fallen the way it did, that they were all incorrect, as Buzzy noted, she could have easily lost that game and not gone on to the TOC. Yeah.
But she does, and Jessica earns our first second chance spot in the TOC. Interestingly enough, yes, for the first time ever in the TOC, we could have a rematch.
A full rematch.
Matt Amodio, Jonathan Fisher. Like, we've had two contestants from a single game go on to a TOC, but never all three. So pretty exciting that three competitors from one single game are all going to be represented in the TOC.
And it was the game that inspired this second chance competition.
Yes. Yeah. So if ever we needed validation that there was something to this second chance idea, I think Jessica Stevens making it to the TOC certainly affirms that we were on the right track with this.
And week two of the second chance competition is beginning right now, tonight.
That's right.
Tune in, find out who that second chancer. That feels like it should be a fourth chancer, but it's just our second chancer who will be in this year's TOC. Moving on, let's get into Celebrity Jeopardy.
Let's do it. Prime time. Jeopardy and prime time.
Prime time, baby.
We've got Celebrity.
Last night, we began our next round of quarterfinal games with Aisha Tyler, John Michael Higgins, and Matt Rogers.
Once again, you could feel a little intimidation when Johnny introduces Aisha Tyler as a former Jeopardy champion. You know, I don't think everyone knows coming in necessarily who they're playing against of our celebrities. And certainly when they hear that, it's instantly intimidating to know that not only has someone been on the Alex Trebek stage before, but they've won. They've come out a champion.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it can work both ways.
Sure.
You get that introduction and now the pressure's on you. And people are going to expect, or there's an expectation that you're going to perform amazingly well because you're in the pocket of the game. And she did perform well. I mean, Michael Higgins, I was impressed with his gameplay. Very steady, very knowledgeable. He was very good on the buzzer.
I had to think Michael Higgins, being a trivia host himself, did have a slight leg up, perhaps. And we had to watch the game to see if that would end up being true.
You know, Michael Harris and I were discussing earlier that I think that part of what helped Michael Higgins was actually a little bit of the generational difference. You know, just for instance, the clue about Heidi. Like, that's something where if you're a little bit older, everyone grew up reading or watching the film versions of Heidi, where Matt Rogers and Aisha Tyler, probably not.
I like that when we headed into Double Jeopardy and Michael got that Daily Double, he was like, I'm going to make it a true Daily Double. And then he said, Mayim, stop me. Like, he couldn't even believe he was going to wager so big on that one.
And I appreciated some bigger wagers in this game. And as we see, it, you know, made a difference. When Matt went all in on that third Daily Double in the Triple Jeopardy round, you could see the joy, the excitement. It was just really fun. I mean, it felt like a great combination of people having fun playing and also really in the game. It was just, I loved watching this episode.
We continued our tradition in Celebrity Jeopardy to feature our Jeopardy celebrities. Obviously, Buzzy was fashion earlier in the celebrity season. And this time, we had Around Philly with Ryan Long, someone who loves his city, and he got to give a full category all about Philadelphia. It played very well. And it was a lot of fun to see Ryan. He had reached out to me a few weeks before the category aired. My mom wants to make sure she records it. What night am I going to be on Celebrity Jeopardy? So fun to see him as well.
The one thing about this game is it was a joy to watch them play, as you kind of mentioned,
yes.
Buzzy. They were very personable. They were really lovely with each other. And as you said, as the gameplay continued along, they were just really having a good time. And I think that made it easier for them to take those chances, and making those chances really elevated the game play all around.
Interestingly enough, Aisha Tyler had the most correct responses in the game, but it comes down to those Daily Doubles.
Absolutely.
And she wasn't able to find them.
If you flip through the game, it really feels like Aisha's game. But John Michael Higgins kind of pulls a card out of the Buzzy Cohen playbook, getting that lead and just letting his opponents kind of make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm claiming that as my playbook, but
I like it. Who knew that he was reading it? But I think maybe he was, perhaps. I hope he continues to study it, because he's heading to the semifinals. But this Sunday, October 30th, join us to find out who will join Michael in the semis. All right, we're going to switch gears now. It's time to continue our road to the TOC. First up, my conversation with five-game winner Erica Hossick. Erica Hossick, welcome back to Jeopardy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How have the past few months been?
It's been a whirlwind. I mean, obviously, you know, we taped in middle of April, and then you have your month or two, which is weird, right? You're the Jeopardy champion, but you can't tell anybody. And so you have to kind of keep it a secret, and it kind of moves in the back of your head, and then your shows are on, and then it's, I mean, the interviews. I was on the Weather Channel. I was on the AccuWeather TV, you know, all the local news stations. Just a crazy week there. It gets to be September, and oh, wow, I got this Tournament of Champions coming up. It's been really fun, especially knowing that this was at the end of the road. This Tournament of Champions was coming up. And it just, I mean, we haven't even started playing yet. I'm just having so much fun.
Well, you didn't just defeat a champion. You defeated a 16-game champion, and then you went on to do your own big run. No wonder they want to talk to you. That's quite an impression you made on the Jeopardy stage.
Yeah, and I mean, I think anyone will tell you, the first thing you kind of do, you show up to the studio in the morning, and you're kind of eyeing, okay, who's the defending champion? Who's here? I hope it's not the person I'm seeing on TV
right
now. And I mean, when I introduced Ryan, the number of games he won and the money he won, that was kind of a dark moment for a second, because you're always like, well, I think I'm okay at this game, but there's always someone better out there. And sure enough, that's who you have to play first. But it kind of helped where I knew I'd play aggressive to begin with, but when you're playing someone that's a super champ, you just need to be aggressive. There's nothing to lose. So that really helped to just, if you get Daily Doubles, go big and be aggressive and stick to that strategy. And it worked. And then, I mean, I was the Monday game, and you just ride that wave as long as you can and went through the whole day. And here we are.
Here we are. You mentioned you've had the least amount of time to prepare. I think you and Megan, what have you done in that amount of time?
I think it probably helped where, you know, I didn't push Jeopardy to the back of my mind for a year and then have to come back into it. You know, I was doing my prep for my tape days in April. Then I took a nice vacation for a little bit. Well deserved. I just needed to step away from the boots for a bit. And then after my shows aired at end of June, I got the itch again, which was good. You're ready to get back into it. And so it's been a couple months now. So just kind of, you know, just trying to learn as much as you can. Obviously, you can't know everything, but as long as you know a little bit about everything, that gets you by okay in Jeopardy. Obviously, it's top tier competition, so we'll just have to go out there and do our best.
How about your buzzer technique? Did you do any work with that, or did you feel like that was pretty strong?
I mean, it came and went. Yeah, I had some times where we just locked in, and then you have some times where you'd lose it. In the same game, it would happen, where you'd be hitting everything, then you'd have a couple where you're locked out, and it would come and go. So you just never know until you go out there on stage. It's a mystery. But yeah, I had my pen. I would click around watching the games on TV to try to get a little bit of timing down. But yeah, we went through rehearsals today. And
what was it like?
Yeah, it was, oh my God.
Shake the dust off?
It is so, you know, just you see that stage again and your eyes light up and you get the buzzer in your hand. And it was really fun to be back there. And then you're up there and you're getting your rhythm and then, you know, your time's up and another group comes in and you're just like, oh, I want to keep going.
Back.
I want to keep going.
Let me play.
So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, like you said, you don't really know until you show up and play how that's going to go. It's always the mystery of Jeopardy is it's not a test, right? It's not the ACTs. It's a competition and buzzer timing is part of the game.
Well, welcome back. We're so excited to have you and I can't wait for the competition to begin for you.
Yeah, same here.
Next up, I had the chance to catch up with six game winner Megan Walkspress. Megan Walkspress, welcome to the Tournament of Champions.
It's amazing to be here.
We knew you were going to make it. There were a lot of circumstances as you were going along your win, but you were one of the few people that knew you were going to make the cut, right? I mean, were you confident?
I mean, I strongly suspected after my fifth win that was generally, historically speaking, the policy that five wins got you in. But, you know, nothing's done until it's done. So
great competition. I mean, you competed and beat a six-day champion. What is in the water this season, Megan?
I don't know. I guess people have had a lot of time at home. More opportunities to study, maybe more folks taking the anytime test. I know for me, that was a big reason I ended up here. I wouldn't have been able to make the time to do the test at the standard time or maybe even travel for audition. So it could be bringing folks out for whom it wouldn't be an option otherwise. I don't know.
What's it like to be a part of this field of 21 of the most impressive contestants we've ever seen in Jeopardy history?
It's truly surreal. I have already competed against Eric, so I've met him. But other than that, it's this bizarre situation of being around celebrities, like people that you like have this kind of celebrity relationship
to. These are Jeopardy celebrities,
but
absolutely.
Now you're like in the same group somehow, sort of, and it's just a dream come true. 12-year-old me like would not have believed it to like see the Tournament of Champions lights come up on the stage and like to be a part of that is just unbelievable.
I've heard so many of your fellow competitors talk about just what a great group this is, just of people, aside from the skill level in Jeopardy. Just what a great group of contestants we have.
Not just the people here, but the people in both of my tape days. Everyone is so thoughtful and kind and genuinely wants to see everyone around them do well. And some of them, present company excluded, are really funny too. So they're like cracking everybody up along the way. It is, the vibes are good. I will say the vibes are very good.
You have been speaking since day one about how you wanted to give back from your winnings and really kind of, you know, do what you can. Have you been able to do that with some of your earnings?
Yeah, so I gave $25,000 to the Homeless Action Center, which is an organization in Oakland and Berkeley that provides legal services to unhoused folks and also drop-in and just general support services, primarily focused on getting folks who are eligible for Social Security insurance but who don't have the wherewithal or the ability to advocate for themselves in those proceedings, to get them in front of a judge and to really get them the support that they're entitled to and should be getting already. So they're an amazing organization, and it felt really good to be able to say, hey, I'm helping.
You are indeed, and just another incredible member of this class of champions. So welcome back to the Tournament of Champions and wishing you all the best of luck.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And next, my conversation with four-game winner, John Fogt. John Fogt, welcome back. You and I go way back.
Yes.
Way back to your Zoom audition.
Oh, yes. It was April, May 2020, somewhere back there.
It was right in the beginning of COVID. Yeah. Who could have known that we'd be meeting up back here in the Tournament of Champions? Not only would you make it on the show, you would have a great streak, and you would be here with this group of champions.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
What has it been like for you? Who could have anticipated the super champions that would come, right?
Well, especially coming out of the streak, I had a four-game streak, and then there were another 12, 15 weeks where no one put together more than three. For a while, it was no one more than two. And it was when I left, I was told, you have an outside chance of making the tournament. As a four-game winner with a six-figure total. Yes. It's pretty good.
Good numbers.
But, you know, don't rely on it. And I did not. And then I watched all that spring, all that summer, as it just kept piling up for a while. And then in very quick succession, there was Matt and Jonathan and Andrew, Tyler. I have those out of order because then was Amy.
Yes.
And at that point, some of my coworkers were like, what are your odds of getting in now? Uh-huh. And I said, I don't know. But we're all very analytical.
This would be a department that could really look at the stats of your chance to get in.
And so I sat down and looked at it and kind of figured out, you know, there's a power law relationship there. You can kind of project out what people are going to do. And I came about and I said, you know, this is about 15% at this point. And then it kept going up and then it went down very quickly. and then I was told that I would be here with the expanded format.
Now, because you've been in the middle of the baseball season, have you been able to study and practice, or is it more just been the analytics that you've been focused on?
People ask me what I study, and it's kind of like, what do you study, the whole sum of human knowledge?
Right.
What do you actually go and look at? And I think it's less about being specific in the studying and more about being intentional about paying attention to the things that are coming up anyway. I did do a lot of analytics. You know, I've been trying to figure out how the game works. And I can tell you, actually, it's in some ways, it's so very contained. You feel like you should be able to understand what goes on with it. You know, win probability models are the first thing that came out in baseball, really, that people looked at. What should you do to win games? What strategies? When is bunting even appropriate to do? Was one of the very first questions that came up. And I tried to build a model for Jeopardy. And there's just too much that's going on. The number of things that are happening, and in particular, the way that there's three players as opposed to two teams, and that the way that the scores relate to each other, not just in how much the absolute difference is, but because of the daily doubles, because of Final Jeopardy, you have to pay attention to the ratios as well. All of that just makes it wildly complex and chaotic in order to model. So I kind of gave up. You know, in pieces, you can put enough together to try and test what your intuition is. What my intuition was going in when I played originally is different than what it is now. There's definitely room, particularly in a field that you know is very strong, to be much less risk averse, to just go for it, not even on like a 50-50 in your mind. If you think there's a 30% chance you're right, maybe go for it, because you need that edge. When you think your competition is better than you have to take those chances. You have to do it. And that's what I'm looking to do.
Well, I can't wait to see you play. Good luck in the tournament. Thanks so much for being back. And we can't wait to watch you play.
Thanks, Sarah.
And finally, we talked about him earlier in the show. Here's my interview with 16-game super champion Ryan Long. Ryan Long, he's here from Philadelphia. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
How have the past, you know, few months been for you in life?
The last few months have been amazing and transitional and transformative and all those multi-syllabic words.
I love when we talked after your first set of wins and I said, you know, Ryan, you're a Jeopardy champion for the rest of your life. And you said, nah, I'm a nobody. Look at you. Have you convinced yourself yet how extraordinary you are?
No.
Well, the city of Philadelphia must certainly be helping convince you.
Yeah, the response has been outsized. I feel like, see, it's hard for me to even talk about it.
I know.
it just doesn't seem real. But I got a thing from the mayor. They were telling me it's our version of the key to the city, which is like the Liberty Bell. It's a little Liberty Bell. It's great. And they were telling me, oh yeah, you know, we don't give these out too often. Sly's got one, and I'm like, Sly Stallone. It's been amazing.
And you are basically the highest seed that isn't seeded into the semifinals. So going into the quarterfinals, you're the most successful champion. Any pressure with that?
No.
No.
No, not really. If I win nothing, it's fine. If I win a game, it would be great. But, you know, it's not going to determine whether or not I have a great time out here. I'm just enjoying seeing everybody and having fun with it, being back on the lot and looking forward to my chicken Caesar wrap at lunch.
What's it like to be a part of this group of champions? I mean, I think season 38 will be talked about for decades.
I think it's amazing. I'm happy to be considered a part of it. I'm still not sure that I deserve it a lot of the time, just because I've, you know, everybody I've met is so bright, and it's hard to believe I'm in this company, but it's really great.
Yeah. You used that word redemption the first time you were here. Do you have any sort of word to describe the second time around?
Enjoyment. Everything that has happened over this summer, it's been a lot of, you know, private stuff too, like I've grown as a person, you know, since I've had this experience and been able to, you know, focus on, you know, living my life a little more freely without having to worry about, you know, grinding myself down every day. Been able to make personal strides and just improve my life in so many ways that I didn't think were possible. So, you know, Jeopardy gave me that, and you know, I'm most appreciative.
Well, with that in mind, I hope you enjoy the Tournament of Champions, and it is so great to have you back.
Thanks. It's good to be back. It's good to see you and everybody.
Great champions. Got to say, I'm a Ryan Long fan. I know I'm not supposed to play favorites, but how can you not love that guy? He's just all heart.
And getting a chance to meet his son at Honors was great. You know, traveling really on his first airplane trip, we asked him, what was it like? He said, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was extremely sweet. All right, time to answer. Factor's ready-to-eat meals make eating better every day easy. When my schedule gets busy, it's nice to have pre-prepared, chef-created, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to my door. With over 35 different options a week to choose from and over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons, make your weekly meal planning even more delicious and easy with Factor. Plus, Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. Head to factormeals.com/Jeopardy50 and use code Jeopardy50 to get 50% off. That's code Jeopardy50 at factormeals.com/Jeopardy50 to get 50% off. Some viewer questions. Victor asks, now that the audience is back, who's doing the warm-up before tapings? Thank you for all you guys do.
Well, thank you, Victor. And I'm happy to say that our warm-up is continued to be brilliantly performed and executed by my Clue Crew partner, Jimmy McGuire. He wears many hats on the tape days these days. In addition to doing the audience warm-up, he also is the host for all of our rehearsal games, and he's also the stage manager. Our stage manager, John Lauderdale, retired after many, many years on the show and kind of had sought Jimmy out for a few years, knowing that he would be a great stage manager. Many of you may not know, but long before the Clue Crew, Jimmy was a stage manager. So kind of coming full circle on that. Great for me because I love being able to share the stage with Jimmy at any opportunity, and he does a great job doing our warm-up as well as so many other things. So thanks for the question, Victor.
Thomas asks, ever since I started watching as a kid, I've always wondered how Jeopardy gets contestants to Los Angeles for taping. How do they know when to travel, take time off? Is there a window that they're given, and how is that calculated?
Well, it can vary, Thomas. We obviously like to give our contestants as much notice as possible. We hope to let them know about a month in advance, but sometimes things happen. It's a shorter window. Our contestants are asked to fly themselves out to Los Angeles for their first appearance. If they end up being a returning champion, then we do provide travel for them on their returning trips out here. So a lot of incentive to go on a super streak. Maybe that's what all the you know, rising airfare costs, maybe that's what has led to all of our super streakers. So it really does vary, but we try to give them as much notice as possible. And then we always have local Los Angeles contestants as alternates on every tape day, so that if anything happens and we have to slot them in, they can do so. And if not, we can invite them back, and we guarantee that they will play on the next time that they make the journey through Los Angeles. But we don't want anyone to fly in and not be able to compete.
Yeah, I was actually an alternate.
Were you really?
Yes, I was. I was an alternate the first time I came. I did not play. And then I came back about a month later, and the rest is history.
Sometimes I think it's great to be an alternate, because without the pressure of competing, you get to kind of come in, see how it works, get out maybe some of the nerves.
I think it definitely helps. The more familiar you are with what is going on, there's so much that happens not on stage that you don't see as a viewer at home. The more comfortable you are with all of that, the better you're going to perform. So I certainly credit it as helping me be as moderately successful as I was.
Oh, you are a big success, Buzz.
Well, thank you for your questions, Victor and Thomas. We love this portion of the show, so please keep sending your questions in to InsideJeopardyPodcast@gmail.com. And that brings us to the end of today's show. We will be back here next Monday to recap week two of the Second Chance competition, another episode of Celebrity Jeopardy. And thank you, Michael, for joining us today. Always a blast to speak with
the Enabler.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Look forward to.
And we are now just 1 week out from this year's historic Tournament of Champions. You can go to Jeopardy.com now and see all of the quarterfinal matchups, with the exception of who will get that coveted last spot from our week two of Second Chance. So you can check out who is matched up against who in the quarterfinals. You're also going to see who is seeded in the semifinals. And we have a special episode during the Tournament of Champions that Michael and I have shared all about on the Jeopardy YouTube channel. So make sure you check that out as well. Also on Jeopardy.com, all the tournament format, how it's going to play out. Remember, this is a little different from in the past, so we have that possible 7-game finals because it's the first player to win 3 games that gets the title of our Tournament of Champions winner. So lots of great stuff to check out at Jeopardy.com as well as on the Jeopardy YouTube channel. On the next Inside Jeopardy, we will share my conversations with our final 5 champions as we reach the end of our road to the TOC. You won't want to miss it, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast, rate us, leave us a comment, share across social, and follow us at Jeopardy on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on YouTube. And we will see you all next week.